1, 2, 3, Tucson. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. As every day, Monday through Friday, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And I'm excited for really how this week is going to close beginning today. Let me set up the show for you today and then we'll get into it. I will start the show this hour with Democratic candidate for Tucson Mayor Randy Dorman in studio with us today.
Hi, Zach.
And that is Randy's voice. How are you, Randy?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here this morning.
Yes, I'm excited. And it really kicks off as we head towards the end of the week. We have Randy Dorman in today. We have candidate Steve Farley in tomorrow at 10, and then candidate Regina Romero in on Friday. Ballots have gone out. Those bubbles are being scribbled into, hopefully legibly and appropriately.
Hopefully for Randy Dorman.
And so we wanted to have our second and final interviews with those mayoral candidates on this show because to a large degree, many think that a lot of votes are going to be cast in these first 2 weeks, even though the primary is not until the end of this month. It's a mail-in process.
So ballots arrive for most people on Saturday. And I was out. So I've been knocking on doors 3 times a week since February as part of our plan. It's been my favorite part of running. And this weekend, I knocked on doors for 7 hours on Saturday and then made 3 hours of phone calls. And same thing on Sunday. And what was so thrilling on Sunday, I walked up to some doors, knocked, and when they answered, they're like, "We voted for you already." So even by Sunday, so many people had already voted.
Right.
I've been really pleased about the engagement in this campaign.
Right. No, that's amazing. And that's exactly why we wanted to get this done this week, because decisions are being made. And this is really going to be, I hope the way that I set up these shows, yours and the others this week, is really one last opportunity to get the visions, the thoughts, the policies, and the plans out there as any who are undecided. I don't know how many there are.
There's quite a few still undecided.
Okay.
And, you know, a few weeks ago, I think up to 40% were still undecided.
Wow.
Maybe even more recently than that. And so every day we're using as an opportunity to explain to people why I'm the best candidate.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do today.
Excellent.
And then when Randy leaves the studio, our hour two is going to look at one city's path to rebuilding and what that could mean for Tucson. And then we'll also talk about this, that a massive amount of our countries and our states and our city's economic growth is statistically driven by the Hispanic community.
Huge.
It's huge. And Tucson, Arizona, is going to outpace the rest of the country by about 15 years in becoming what they call majority-minority.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in that sense, Arizona is really on the cutting edge of that. And as a piece of that, more than almost any other demographic, entrepreneurship and economic growth has been driven by the Hispanic community over the last few years at a pace that outpaces really any other kind of community or subgroup in our larger community. So I want to talk about what that means for Tucson as well.
Huge.
In the second hour. And that's going to be a call-in show. But first and foremost, we have Randy Dorman in the studio. So Randy, this is not your first time on this show. It's not your first time by far at the station. We almost have a cot with everybody's name on it in the back, because it probably feels like you live here. But so let me ask a different kind of first question. Tell me about that tipping point moment when you said, okay, I'm in it and I'm in it to win it. What was that moment that pushed you over the edge to make the decision to run for Tucson mayor?
So I had been thinking about it for a long time. In fact, when I moved here 20 years ago and was leaving my friends in New York, I said to them, I'm nervous about moving to a new place and making new friends. This was 20 years ago. And one of them turned to me and laughed and said, "Oh, please, before you know it, you'll be mayor." And sometimes, you know, somebody says something and it puts an idea in your head. And literally every year that I've been here, I'm a doer and I like to set vision and make change. And every year someone said to me, "You need to run for mayor. You need to run for mayor." So it's been in my mind for a long time. 8 years ago, when Mayor Walkup was finished running, I had thought about it, but my daughter was six at the time. Mm. And it was not really the right time for us as a family. It wasn't really the right time for me personally. And so I didn't. And then the last year, my daughter, who just turned 15, for a year, she's like, "Is Jonathan running again? You need to ask him. If he doesn't run, you need to run."
And your daughter is a rock star. I mean, she's gonna
make amazing things happen. And Sky, I'm putting it out there, you're gonna be president one day. she just came back.
She was
from
pushing you.
A 3-week social justice program at the University of Pennsylvania, because that's her passion. And I'm super proud of her. But she was pushing me, many people were pushing me, and there's a big difference between having it as an idea in the back of your head and actually doing it. But once Jonathan decided not to run, I wanted to make sure that I could put a good team together and create a path to winning. And it took me longer than the other two candidates because they had their teams in place. They had, you know, one's really an establishment candidate, the other has a machine behind her. I had nothing and started from scratch. But once I knew that I had a good team in place and a path to winning, because I wasn't doing this for just an exercise, I'm doing this to win and make real change, then we just, that was really the tipping point, seeing the path to victory and knowing that I had a good team in place. So that was February. We did our kickoff mid-February.
Man, it's crazy. Time flies.
Yeah, it's just been incredible.
There's so much that has happened, like I said, since the last time you were in studio. And for a while, and I'm sure you're aware of this, so many people were like, "Man, what is the daylight between some of these candidates?" And then, boom, about a month ago, it became very apparent. So we're going to cover all of those themes and talk about themes like your endorsement that's happened by the Arizona Daily Star, you know, housing issues that have come up that you've spoken into. We're going to hit on all of that. But just to kind of finish setting the table, maybe, in my opinion, you've carved out a lane that is, and some talking points that I haven't seen the other two Democratic candidates carve out. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. And it's this, in your promotional materials, in your ads, in your spots with news organizations, you had a consistent theme. And that is, in your mind, Tucson has not reached its potential consistently, and that frustrates you. And that's the message that I feel like you've owned in a way as a campaign. You've said, "This is our message
from day one."
The other candidates, I don't think, have, for other strategic reasons, and I have my journalist hat on at the moment, haven't taken that lane. And in Tucson, and I'll stop here, in Tucson, I feel like you have to be you have to figure out how to say those things in a way that makes sense, because I think, you know, Tucson wants to, and again, this is my editorial journalist hat on, wants to cheerlead itself to victory, and sometimes not hit on what is really under the surface. And sometimes we kind of raise an eyebrow to folks who try to speak that truth. You made the decision to do that. This is a long way to this point. Why did you do that, and how has that message been resonating that you found?
So I decided to do that because I want to be Tucson's chief cheerleader. But actually, I really want to be Tucson's chief coach. And a coach wants to lead your team to victory by working on, by celebrating the areas where you're already strong, but working on the areas where you're not. So if you're just a cheerleader and pander to the crowd about what they want to hear, and you're not honest about where we could and absolutely should be doing better, I don't think that you're really doing well for Tucson. I love this community, and there is so much more that we need to be doing to turn ourselves into a thriving 21st century city. And for me, that is not a political talking point. That is really trying to get at, we have a 24% poverty rate here in a community with the people and resources that we have. How is that okay? We have the ability to change that. And so we can't cheerlead ourselves to death and not take care of the real problems that are here. I'm also not on the other side, which is only talking about problems. I'm actually about, like, what is our vision? So my vision is Tucson really can be a thriving 21st century city that is rooted in its culture and heritage. How are we going to get there? So I spent a lot of time setting the vision, but also creating very pragmatic plans about what we can do, what as mayor I can do, what as mayor and council we can do. And, you know, the other campaigns have wandered into territory that we have no control over. I think that's disingenuous. And I've really focused on what can we do. I have 14 pages of actual plans that can move us forward. So I've been really proud to set the table that way, to use your language.
Well, and we're going to get into some of those policies, strategies, and again, since the last time we talked in studio, yeah, a lot of hot button issues have popped up. A lot of things have popped up, everything from Sanctuary City to I-11 to the news that we are brain draining out of this city at a rate that outpaces almost any other major city in the country, young professionals. And I did the research by hand this weekend, and the numbers add up, right? When I see a private insurance company do research, you know, you got to think, what's the reason?
What's their angle?
And so many of my colleagues said 13%. That seems like a lot. How did they get to that number? I did the math, Randy, by hand with census data. The numbers add up. There's no spin to those numbers. It is what it is. So many of these things have popped up. In the next segment and after that, we're going to get into policies, your strategic plan, your thoughts on those issues. But to close out this segment, to finish setting the table, what would you say are those barriers? Just maybe two or three things. You said there are some barriers to reaching Tucson's potential. This has been kind of your message.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you had to name those barriers in your mind, what are those barriers?
Well, the biggest one is that we have not had a real and robust focus on creating more and better paying jobs and really growing our economy. I know that you're into stats. Well, we had 1.2% job growth last year. That's the most current numbers. That is almost flat. And that is well below Phoenix, the state, the country, and it plays right into that millennial statistic. And it's not just the millennials. I mean, like I said, I've been knocking on doors since February, and that's what people talk about the most, that there isn't opportunity. They love the life here. We all love the life here, but many people have a job, not a career, and they don't really see a path to that getting any better. We talk about the housing crisis, how high housing prices are going, and that is a huge problem. But the corollary problem to that is that wages are not increasing at the same pace that housing prices are increasing. And you have to look at the underlying factors of both. What can you control and what can you not? And we're not taking care of the piece that we can actually control.
Yeah. Well, and the sad but true fact is that personal incomes have been stagnant in Arizona for about 50 years now. And in both Tucson and Phoenix, to be honest, are 15 to 20%. On the personal income side are 15 to 20% below the rest of the country. And, you know, there's been a lot of thought work even outside of just the political campaigning side of things. Is, does Tucson have an affordability problem or an income problem? I think the answer is both. The answer is both.
Jinx.
Yeah. Tucson's a small town. Things get talked about in very small groups of people. But speaking of small town, I don't want to double speak, but I actually want to push back on that. Tucson is the 33rd largest city in the country.
Right.
And I don't know how many times as a community we think of ourselves as the 33rd largest in the entire U.S., 33rd largest city in the country. Do we act like that? Putting my coach hat on, right? I don't know, you know?
Oh yeah, we definitely don't, for better and for worse. So, I mean, really, I'm just going to repeat that my goal is to have Tucson become the thriving 21st century city that we deserve, but also have us rooted in our culture and our character, because that is what makes us unique. If we lose that, we lose everything. And there is a way to do both.
And that's how we'll close out the first segment. That kind of set the table. When we come back, I asked on social media, I said, hey, look, I'm going to have all these candidates on. This is the last time they're going to be on my show. You got one more shot. What do you want to know? And a lot of the responses were, I hear, and this was just in general, this is one about, wasn't about a candidate or more, it's just in general, a feeling there's been a lot of plans, a lot of platitudes, a lot of saying the right things, but without really a strategic policy or plan or vision to actually getting there. Right. So in this, so for example, we need more cops. Everybody agrees, well, but haven't heard how do we get there? So that's kind of where my question is going to go after the break, because you have a 14-page policy plan. You have strategies in place.
Right. Like I've really tried to put actual plans that we can do. And right. I think it's ridiculous to put on your website, we should have more cops. Really? Of course. Let's talk about real ideas that are going to make a difference, or ideas that we all think are good and the ways to do them.
So that's what our listeners want to hear. We'll get into that when we come back from the break with Randy Dorman, Democratic candidate for Tucson mayor. Much more to come. And we're going to talk about a lot of the recent happenings and recent big conversations in our community as we head towards an end of August primary election. Tucson, don't go away. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show here on this lovely Wednesday morning as we kick off today and the next 2 days by having our second and last conversation with the three Democratic candidates for mayor here in Tucson. And we're kicking off with Randy Dorman in studio with us live in studio. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here, Zach. I love speaking with you.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, this time just flies so quickly. We have so much to get into, so I want to go ahead and just jump in.
Anything you want to talk about?
So let me start with this, and I actually was going to start with something different, but I want to go here first, and that is if I've seen your campaign try to strike a clear difference on an issue, and you've done it on many, but I think the clearest to me has been on housing. After one of the debates, you came out pretty strongly and said, look, my campaign is not going to give fluff answers and promises that I know we can't keep.
Right.
You came out pretty strongly, and I want to provide space for you to speak to that. And of your policy platform, your plans for housing really stood out to me as being kind of the most policy specific.
Thank you.
And so I want to definitely hit on this. What was your frustration? Tell me about what you're seeing in the overall context of this very hot button issue. How is it not being talked about in your mind correctly, and how do you think the conversation should happen?
Sure. So housing and affordable housing and gentrification, they're all part of a conversation that's been happening. And I have always wanted to be informative, truthful, even when it's hard, and provide real answers. And I was disappointed that the other candidates, one in particular, panders to whatever crowd is there with simplistic solutions that are actually prohibited by state law, and he does it anyway. So I actually have development experience, and some people have tried to paint me as a big bad developer, which just is not the truth. My husband and I developed with two of our friends a great project called the Ice House Lofts in 2002, before anyone was doing that. We've done really thoughtful, sustainable infill projects, not huge ones, and we've really shown Tucson what is possible. So we're not big production developers, no matter what people might want to say. And we have a housing issue in Tucson. We have a 94% rental occupancy rate. So that is kind of how we need to set that table. That is high, and that is why rents are so high. If it goes to 96%, rents will rise another 10%. So we need more housing overall, and then we have a very specific affordable housing issue. And we have to have a laser focus on that as well, but it has to be understood in the broader context. So some people were trying to vilify any incentive being given to create housing, but we need housing. And then we have to figure out ways to get affordable housing. Affordable housing only happens when there's a funding source. If you force people to do affordable housing and it doesn't make financial sense, no housing is going to be created. So what I've really done is analyze where are existing funding sources that maybe aren't being used or funneled into the right places, where are other ones that we could rechannel, and what are new ones that we need to look at. So 90% of the affordable housing that is created in the United States is funded through low-income housing tax credits, LIHTC funds. And a lot of those are not available or not available in the same way that they have been over the past few years. So the affordable housing that we've seen in and around downtown, those parameters have changed, and you wouldn't be able to do those projects today. So we need to get the city and the county together to figure out what of those funds are available, where are other federal or state funding opportunities that could help with that, and really identify the areas where we want that to happen. But the other tools we have available are the GPLET tax abatement, where if we expanded it into an area and said that in that area it should only be used for affordable housing, that could work. We could provide more density to developers in areas if they were to include affordable housing. That makes a lot of sense. And there's a new federal program called Opportunity Zones. There's 21 of them in the city of Tucson, and they are meant for areas where there has been lower income, lower opportunity, and it is these funds that will create a lot of funding for projects that we want in those areas. We can use that for affordable housing. The city of Tucson has really not used opportunity zones yet. I've gone to several talks about them because just in my development experience, it's important. And there's a lot we can do using opportunity zones as well. So for me, the key is, instead of just creating fluffy answers that are going to make people feel good, what are the real solutions to this very real problem? And I'm not afraid of those hard questions. They just have to be answered truthfully and with a real solution. So that's what I've tried to do.
So some of the rhetoric around this has involved, and I say rhetoric, I don't mean that in a bad sense, because these are very real policies that many cities around the country are using. Things like rent control, inclusionary zoning, things like that. I know this was brought up at both ward level debates and also mayoral debates. How does a Randy Dorman mayoral administration view those kind of policies?
So it's really important to remember that although rent control sounds good, it is specifically prohibited by state law in Arizona and generally prohibited.
It's one of three states.
Yeah, and inclusionary zoning, which means so you cannot require affordable housing as part of a rezoning here. You cannot. It is prohibited by state law. And one of the mayoral candidates actually voted for that twice when he was a legislator. It's prohibited by state law. So even if you wanted to do it, you can't. And so I'm just all about, I'm running for mayor of Tucson. There are very specific things that we can do. We have to spend our time finding real answers, not putting out false answers, simplistic answers, answers that are against state law just to get the roar of the crowd.
One of the Facebook comments I mentioned in the last segment that I floated these interviews out on Facebook to get people asking, and here's how one person put it. Each of the candidates keeps talking about paying police more, repairing roads, et cetera, but I haven't heard any other plans on how to pay for those important items. How are they planning on funding those? First of all, is that a correct assessment, do you believe, of what you've said and spoken about? Or has this person maybe not just heard what you have to offer? But it's a good question. How? Because when I look at the budget, I see a budget that it will be in the black for the first time. Well, Mayor Rothschild will leave a budget that is in, yes, is in the black. And when I look at it, and what do I know, right? But when I look at it, I don't see, you know, parts of the budget where I go, man, there's millions there that should move over here.
Right.
It seems like it's a very skinny, appropriately allocated budget in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. The city budget. I don't know if you agree, but it seems like we're going to have to add to the pie, not just work with the pie that we have. So I'm going to ask you that question. How do we pay for what you have said needs to be done?
So it's a great question, and it's not a simple answer. So there's a long-term part of my plan and a shorter-term part of my plan. Over the long-term, that is very specifically why my number one goal is to grow our economy, create more and better-paying jobs. Also, in terms of building our budget, looking at bringing new businesses here, annexation as a very important tool for us, regional cooperation, where instead of having the silos between the city and the county, we cooperate and collaborate more and even create efficiencies that we could then put back into our budget. I very much understand that that is longer term. So shorter term, like specifically for the police and getting more police, we're on a good trajectory in terms of what is being allocated in the budget and what will be allocated, as well as the number of recruits that we have, but we're not there yet. We should be somewhere between 20 and 24 officers per 10,000 people. And some of the issue is ensuring that our officers don't leave mid-career. And I spoke with the Police Officers Association, and what they would like to see is the classifications pay model, which they think would stem some of the mid-career moves and keep some of the officers here. I've also proposed a $5,000 housing credit for any officer who chooses to live in the city of Tucson, because the more officers we have here, the safer our city is and the more integrated they are into the city. And some of the ways, and I have other ideas for police as well, but some of the ways to pay for that is when Prop 101, which right now goes towards roads and infrastructure for public safety, when that needs to be renewed, that we look at bifurcating the portion for public safety to not just be for capital, but also for operations. We also need to work robustly with the state legislature to have them take on more of the police pension, police and fire pension fund.
Do you see the renewal of 101 as being maybe a mid? A mid-range proposal to keep funneling more money?
Exactly.
So the county, for example, is starting to realize that that like road repair needs to be more and more out of the general fund if possible.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of Tucsonans are on that page, is we probably can't keep bonding and propping out, you know,
yes, and
these
I agree.
And you agree.
I agree. But our city budget is still too anemic. And again, I'll just go back to a community where we have 24% of our population in poverty. We don't necessarily have enough money in the city budget right now to meet the needs of the people of the city of Tucson. And we see that every day. So we need to figure out the best ways to increase our city's budget, and growing our economy as a whole with very practical steps, I think, is the best way to do that.
We are on with Randy Dorman, a Democratic candidate for mayor. We're going to go to a break just a couple minutes early because when we come back, I want to kind of do a little bit of a rapid fire round on some topics and then also talk about some endorsements you've received.
Sure.
I want to get your thoughts on why you think they went your way. And then also if there's anybody who wants to ask you one final question
Sure.
or two, before the primary, this is the last 20 minutes that this show and our listeners
will. I can't believe how fast it's going.
I know. We'll get with Randy Dorman, Democratic candidate for mayor. 790-2040. Is that live line opportunity. We'll get to as many as we can because we have so much left to go. We're going to make it happen in the next few minutes. Let's go to our break. You are listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back with Randy Dorman in a minute. Tucson, welcome back to a quickly moving hour with our first of three Democratic candidates for mayor that we'll have on this program throughout the next 3 days. Randy Dorman is with us in studio today. Steve Farley will be in at 10 tomorrow, and Councilmember Regina Romero from Ward 1 will be in on Friday at 11. We're going to move into a little bit of a rapid fire round here in a minute, but let's talk about some of the things, and these are all things, in fact, that have popped up since we were together not that long ago, but a lot of things have come into the picture.
Sure.
Your campaign, you as a candidate, were endorsed by the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce and the Arizona Daily Star.
Yes.
And we were talking about this a little earlier. You weren't surprised, right? You, in your words, you set the vision. This is what you thought should happen, and it happened. But a lot of people were surprised in the sense of that maybe that sense that you may have been a surprise endorsement related to what everyone thought was going to happen. And that's just, you know, what's being said out there. But you
got it. Yeah, I mean, in both instances, I think if you were betting and if you were not intimately involved with my campaign and what we've been doing, you know, you would have gone to the default that an established candidate would have gotten those endorsements.
So why you? I guess that's my question. In your mind, what led to those endorsements?
Well, with both of them, I was so proud of both. From the beginning, we have set a vision of where Tucson needs to go and backed it up with real ideas, not political rhetoric, to get us there. And we have hammered that message over and over that Tucson, we need to be doing better. We've set the vision. Here's how we can do it. And in both instances, with the Tucson Metro Chamber, it was a unanimous endorsement. And it was very much because I have a vision of Tucson as a thriving 21st century city rooted in our culture and heritage. And I have very real ideas to get us there. And with the Arizona Daily Star, they very specifically said, big picture thinker who has the grounded details to bring her vision to life. And so I was incredibly grateful for both of those endorsements. And when I say I wasn't surprised, I only meant that they reflected back exactly what we've been doing. It was very gratifying and validating for them to do that.
I wanted to get that.
Thank you.
I mean, this is just on the lines of a lot of people. I think a lot of people went, wow.
And also we've been running a very truthful campaign. You know, I stood at a gentrification forum and I spoke the truth. And in every instance, I am not afraid of the hard questions. Hard questions have hard answers. And if we don't have truthful answers and a truthful discussion, we can't find the real solutions. So at every point, I've been honest about who I am, what I want to do. And in the first couple of months, I was frustrated that it was hard to get traction. And then people started really listening. And we have so much momentum. It's been exciting. But those two endorsements and the realtors, but especially the Arizona Daily Star, that was just wonderfully validating. And I do have to say, I jumped up and down at 2 a.m. when when I found out.
vulnerable moment there. I say this on the air all the time. We forget that all these folks are humans, you know?
Oh, and this has been very, I mean, the whole, I have never run for something before. I've been a businesswoman for 30 years. And so I'm used to managing, setting plans and executing them, which is what we've tried to do here. But with each new experience, there's, you know, you're always a little bit of uncertainty, and I always like to be very prepared. I always feel like I can never prepare enough. So it has been the range of emotions, but always just trying to stay focused on the end goal. If I win, we can make real positive change here. And yeah, so 2 a.m, my husband was cracking up because I'm like jumping up and down in our bed. Oh my God, I got that endorsement. So that was very exciting.
That's hilarious. We're with Randy Dorman in studio, one of 3 Democratic candidates for Tucson mayor. Let's do a little bit of a rapid fire round through some of the big issues and topics in the news that have happened since you were last in studio. Sanctuary City, it's been a hot topic. It did make it on the ballot. If you haven't seen Tucson, the scene from mayor and council last night.
Oh my God, that was so funny.
The guy in the green shirt has been looping in this city for a while. We had some friends from Phoenix. Anyway, that's just fun radio stuff. Back to the serious comment. Randy Dorman, Sanctuary City, good or not for Tucson?
So the initiative that is going to be on the ballot, all 3 of us as mayoral candidates have come out against, because while it has a lot of very important issues in it, Tucson there'll be financial consequences to Tucson of up to $100 million, and I think that there are ways that we can create a lot of the same protections without having it be an actual law.
We may come back to this if we have time, but this hour is moving so quickly. The I-11.
Yes. So I am with mayor and council in opposition to it going through Avra Valley, and I'm a proponent of expanding the I-10 so that we keep the traffic going through our business centers and not into our natural beauty.
And you think that would be a sustainable solution through 2055 when we are projected to expand by 30%, any population, any concerns there?
I think that an expansion of I-10 paired with what I'd like to see long-term as rail, from increased rail from Sonora through Flagstaff, really thinking of ourselves not just as a region, Tucson and Phoenix, but really the whole Sun Corridor from Sonora to Flagstaff.
The Tucson streetcar, good, bad, ways to go, indifferent.
Streetcar.
I say two things on this show and it always gets calls. Grant and Alvernon, Tucson streetcar. I'm just kidding. So Tucson streetcar, Randy Dorman.
Streetcar has been incredible. Over $1 billion of public and private investment around the streetcar. But I think it's important to recognize 2 things about it. It is only 4 miles long. So from a public transportation standpoint, it is limited. And also, it was primarily funded by federal infrastructure dollars. In my plan, I want us to plan for an expansion first to the airport, where I think is the most opportunity, but then also east and north, paired with bus rapid transit. I want us to have those plans ready so that when we have a new president and hopefully federal infrastructure funds will be available again, we are shovel ready and first in line, that our plans are already done when that happens and we can use those sources again.
This last one, I feel like I would be doing a journalistic disservice if I didn't bring it up. What do you make of the narrative and rhetoric around clean elections? And I'll leave it there and you answer it however you want to answer it.
I think there's been a lot of misinformation about clean elections. So from a big picture standpoint, I think that getting money out of politics is enormously important. And I have signed on to outlaw dirty money, and money in politics has really It's terrible. In the city of Tucson, we have very rigid rules about how much money a clean or traditional candidate can take. I chose to run as a traditional candidate because I wanted to get actual support for my campaign. If you run clean or traditional, you can get a maximum of $500 from an individual. If you run clean, you can get up to $100,000 approximately of taxpayer money as a match for your campaign. And as a traditional candidate, you cannot. But as a traditional candidate, you can take $1,000 from PACs. And you are not allowed to take money from corporations. So the idea that in the city of Tucson, that it's being infiltrated by corporations, that is just baloney. Because the other dynamic, and Tim Steller did an article on this today, is that there are all these outside PACs spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, by the time I'm done, I'll have around $200,000 to spend on my campaign. It'll be less likely than Rahina or Steve have. But I also don't have independent expenditure committees spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for me. So I just think you can't have it both ways. And I have not made a big deal out of it because I'm setting a vision. I have my plans. I am getting it out there in as many ways as I can. And that's what I'm doing. But I think it's important that people look behind what's being said and very carefully, especially at all the outside money that's coming in.
We're on with Randy Dorman, one of three Democratic candidates for mayor here in Tucson. We have about 5 minutes left. I think my last lightning round question is related to the news that came out about a week and a half ago that Tucson ranks as one of the major cities in the country that are having the hardest time retaining and attracting millennials. Those numbers seem to pan out after mm-hmm. further research. How did that strike you? And what's the solution to retain and attracting top talent to Tucson?
So I wasn't that surprised by it because that is why my number one focus in my campaign is about growing our economy, creating more and better paying jobs. Because if you look at where those millennials are going, all of those top markets that are attracting millennials, they all cited job opportunity. So we have a wonderful way of life here. But if people can't come here for a career, if they feel that they can't make enough money to create the lifestyle that they want, they're going to leave. And I see it over and over. When I started my campaign, my first day out, I was walking through Barrio Viejo and ran into a couple that I knew who were leaving for Austin because they had tried and tried and really could not find professional opportunity here. So it was not surprising to me. And my vision is specifically to counteract that.
Randy Dorman, a Democratic candidate for mayor. As we wrap up, we've covered a lot of ground.
Yes.
But what is something that we didn't get to talk about that you feel differentiates yourself from the other candidates? What's the one last thing you'd like to talk about and leave with our listeners?
We have talked about this a little bit, but really, I hope that everybody looks very carefully at what people are saying, and not just how they make you feel, but what they're saying and what their actual plans are, because we cannot move Tucson forward without real, actionable plans. So I am, I'm a doer, and I set vision and I do. And if you think about what a mayor here does, a mayor has one vote on the council, the same as the council people. So what is going to make her effective? Being able to set a vision, collaborate with people to create a plan and make that vision happen. And from, you know, developing the Ice House to being president of the Museum of Contemporary Art, chairwoman of the Downtown Tucson Partnership, everything I've done has been about setting vision, connecting and collaborating to create a plan and making that vision happen. And that's what Tucson deserves. A little plug, if you do have questions about my platform, if you go to randyformayor.com, it's R-A-N-D-I, formayor.com. On my vision page, you can download my policies and you can email me through my website. I'd love to answer any questions that you have.
One other final differentiating thing, and I'm going to ask the other candidates this as well. There's a differing view. I think we can get through this in the next 3 minutes and not cut anybody off. There's a differing view of the length and the reach of the mayor's bully pulpit. I've heard that phrase a lot here in Tucson. You seem to have taken, correct me if I'm wrong, please, you seem to have taken a little bit more of a conservative approach, and I don't mean politically, conservative approach to that bully pulpit. In other words, and you mentioned earlier in this interview, look, there are city charter issues. I'm going to be a mayor for the city charter issues. The other two candidates on the Democratic side seem to feel that the bully pulpit can reach further. Do you agree or disagree with my perspective on that? And please disagree if it's wrong. And if that is a correct assessment of your campaign, why is that important?
Yeah, I disagree because it is not a question of what the length of the bully pulpit. I mean, you from a bully pulpit, you can talk about anything that you want. The question is the reach of what you can actually affect change with. And that is vastly different because certainly as mayor, you can vocally stand against many of the terrible things that are going on in the country. But you have to also have a plan for what you can do as a city, what is actionable. And that's why I have been very clear. I am running for mayor of Tucson. I'm not running for governor. I'm not running for Congress in the future. I am not a career politician. I've wanted to be mayor of Tucson because it's the very best way for me to have positive impact in this community. And I understand what that role is.
Randy Dorman for mayor. One more time, that website.
randyformayor.com, R-A-N-D-I-F-O-R, mayor.com.
One last wild card question.
Sure.
from our listeners.
Yeah.
When your policy and political experience as mayor wraps up, what do you see yourself doing in Tucson? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what is your long-term investment in this community? I thought it was a very interesting question I wanted to ask you.
Sure. So I would like to be mayor for likely 8 years. And that's it. And if it's four, that's fine too. I have always been so active in this community, in the arts, downtown. I just want to continue building, to move this community forward. And I don't have specific plans that way, but I didn't start off thinking I was going to, lead the way in revitalizing downtown. I didn't start off thinking I was going to be president of Museum of Contemporary Art for almost 6 years, but I tend to find where need is and get there and help make positive change.
I thought it was an interesting question because it gets at the heart of what I think drives you and these other campaigns. So I tend to ask it of every candidate. So thank you for answering.
Sure.
RandyForMayor.com. That's Randy with an I. We've referenced your 14-page policy plans. You can find that on the website. You can ask questions. You can sign up to volunteer in the final hours.
Yes, volunteer and make sure you hand in your ballots and vote for Randy.
RandyForMayor.com. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time, Zach. You do such a great job. I just love this show and I'm grateful to be on here.
Thank you so much. Until next time, Tucson. That does it for our 10 o'clock hour. See you in a few minutes to talk more Tucson. We'll be right back.